you a little. I thought you were going to say you only chose two speakers because you know both Jerry and I are not capable of giving talks less than 50 minutes because that's how long a lecture used to be. So I'm wearing several hats today. National Beef Cattle Evaluation Consortium, as well as Thetis Solutions, which is a company that Bruce Golden and I created, and Department of Animal Science in Iowa State. So hopefully it will be obvious as we go along which hat I'm wearing on a particular slide. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the past that led us to where we are right now with evaluations, and then I'm going to talk to you a little bit about some of the things that are happening in the future. And I'm not just limiting it to the things that I'm doing, I'm also going to add some things that Angus are doing that doesn't currently involve us. So the consortium mission, the Beef Cattle Evaluation Consortium, was a group funded by a special grant, and it occurred when it was recognised that the number of animal breeders working in beef cattle improvement in the US was less than the number of employees in the average McDonald's franchise. A little bit of a scary thought. And if that scares you, well, there's actually less than that working in beef cattle improvement now. So our mission was to develop and implement improved predictions so selection can enhance economic viability, and to provide science-based genetic evaluation of pure and crossbred animals for any economically relevant trait. So when we talk about prediction of merit, to me, it really involves three things that we need to think about. The first one is what we call the model, which is a way of describing what it is that determines the phenotypes you observe. The second thing is the statistical method we will use to estimate the parameters in the model. And then the third thing is a computing algorithm to implement that statistical method in some sort of computer setting so that you can get the predictions you're interested in this case, typically EPDs. And it's possible that all three of these things can change over time as new information comes along, and I'll try and explain some of those as we go. So a farmer might well recognise that performance is breeding and feeding, or a biology student phenotype is genotype plus environment. But an animal breeder that was trained from anyone who had anything to do with Cornell University would write it in this kind of equation. So here we have Y, this is a vector of phenotypes, so this might be all the birth weights, weaning weight, yearling weight, feed intake, carcass, ultrasound. B is a vector of unknown effects, such as herd year effects, ages of dams, sexes, and so on, and there might be millions of those in a large evaluation. And then U, this is a vector of the breeding values, or you might like to think of them as the EPDs. So this is the main reason you're interested in us fitting this model. So this model says phenotype is due to environment plus genotype plus a leftover residual, but what you want are predictions of the U bit. So the statistics are all about fitting this model somehow to give you EPDs. And the computer handled his PhD thesis at Iowa State University, although he didn't write it this way. This is the mixed model equation form of that, and here are those matrices X, and here's the vector Y, and the only thing that's different is that we have added onto here A inverse, and A is a matrix that's determined by the pedigree relationships. So everything we've been doing ever since we started producing EPDs is somehow setting up and solving those equations. And the way we used to solve them, the way they're often still solved today, is we would just take some kind of a guess about the values of B and U, and one guess would be zero. They're all zero. And then we would try and work out how can we improve that guess. And some of them we would move up a bit, and some of them we would move down a bit. And we would update the guess in a method called iteration. And we would continually updating it for maybe 10,000 times until we got to the point where we can't find a solution that's better than the current one we have. And at that point, this vector of all those EPDs is what would end up in your catalogues. But the other thing you want in your catalogues is a measure of the accuracy. And theoretically, the accuracy comes from the inverse of this set of equations here. This is a very large set of equations, but based on A inverse here, it's actually very, very sparse. So almost every element is zero. So all the methodologies we adopted from the sort of 70s onwards took advantage of the fact that this thing here was very, very sparse. Now, we couldn't invert this whole set of equations, so we made approximations. And those approximations worked reasonably well when this was sparse, but they don't work so well if it's dense. So pre-genomics approach, set up and solve those equations. That was such a big job when we were doing it back in the 80s and involving tapes and cards that everybody thought you could only do it two or three times a year. We approximated the accuracy. Since two or three times a year wasn't often enough for some breeders, we would approximate these and do interim calculations. And so there would be an interim approximate EPD and an interim approximation of approximate accuracy. Okay, so that's how things were doing. Now, when all this was going on, there were parallel developments that were taking place in four land-grant universities. So Bruce Golden developed some software called the Animal Breeders Toolkit, which he made publicly available, the source code on that. And what he hoped is anybody working with it would make it better, and it would just gradually evolve. Unfortunately, the only evolution that ever took place was some people converted it to work on Windows. There was never any updates other than that done. Pollock and Simmental, they developed multi-breed software to do evaluations. Iowa State, Doyle Wilson, developed some Fortran code to do the evaluations for American Angus. At Georgia, along with Beneshek and Bertrand, Ignacy Bitzel developed some Fortran code, and probably a lot of you might have heard of his BLUPF 90. And the other one that's relevant to beef cattle in this country is in the University of New England in Armidale, Australia. AGBU, Bruce Teer in particular, developed some code for Fortran. Now, there are other people elsewhere in the world that did the same kind of thing, but none of them got used here in beef cattle, so I'm only telling you about those ones. So the Beef Cattle Evaluation Consortium was formed to try and consolidate research across those four groups. And one of the first things we said was it makes no sense for those four land-grant universities to be running these evaluations anymore. We were no longer funded by the Ag Experiment Stations to do that. What we should be doing is research, and what we should be doing is moving the servicing out to the breed associations. And we were hoping that that might actually lead to consolidation where there was only one evaluation system used for everybody. At the same time, we tried to develop and fund a software development centre which was going to be at the University of Georgia, and we got approval from the breed associations. They were going to pay us 50 cents for every new registration to evaluate growth traits, and when we added carcass and ultrasound, they would go up to a dollar a registration. So that would be about 600k a year that would have come in every year to support ongoing improvements. And all of this was backed up with beef improvement extension and outrage. So just to tell you a little bit about how things have moved from there up to where they are today, and I'll do it by breed association. So American Angus ended up contracting University of Georgia to use that BLUPF 90 software in-house. They imagined they would sell that system or run that system for other breed associations, so they created a subsidiary AGI to do that. They've ultimately moved to weekly runs, so they don't have to do any interims. They use something like a 10 million animal pedigree and add about 300,000 records a year. And they fit about 10 different models, so growth models and carcass models and carbonese models and so on. The American International Charolais Association, they also get AGI now to do their evaluations. They've got a little over a million animals, and that's Charolais and some Charolais cross animals. The American Hereford Association was represented by separate Hold and Hoard Hereford groups, and they decided to put those together, and that was a nightmare because they used different kind of ID systems. And the group them to Australia, the group that markets Breed Plan, and they did a great job of merging the Hold and Hereford databases to have a single Hereford database. And along the line somewhere there, they partnered with Canada, Argentina and Uruguay to run a Pan-American cattle evaluation. Okay? So they are on a cross-country evaluation. It currently involves 13 growth, carcass, and ultrasound traits. They all run together in one big analysis, and they also do a separate calving ease. Although their pedigree is huge, they use about 6 million animals in it, and it's essentially a within breed analysis, although there are a few Hereford side crossbred animals in there. Cornell software, when John Pollock moved to US Mark, or just before, they moved the software from Cornell, where it used to be run, to the American Simmental Association. And because they ran mixed breed, they had Simmental upgraded and Simmental Brahman crosses, they were already doing a large multi-breed analysis. They've attracted some other breeds who were also doing multi-breed analyses. And so gradually many of these other associations, some of who did run with AGI, joined in with the Simmental evaluation, and now they have formed what they call IGS, or International Genetic Solutions, as the headline that they use to represent this group that works together. Their pedigree is about 15 million animals that's used in their evaluation, and they're adding about 340,000 a year. So this is a bigger analysis in terms of pedigree and bigger analysis in terms of number of animals added per year than is the American Angus Association evaluation. But one of the problems for them is there's no remaining inventor support, because neither Dick Cross or John Pollock are around to help improve the system anymore. So in addition to those big three evaluations, there are some other that I've used the word boutique to describe. So Bruce's old ABTK software is still used at Colorado State to run certain analyses, certain traits they've been running, like stayability. And then Livestock Genetic Services is a small company that John Janot runs and is part-time, and he's been running evaluations for the Rex Ranch and Deseret and Santa Gertrudis, Brangus, and so on. Okay, so while all this was going on, there were a number of other developments. And in 1997, one of the first ones that most people don't know much about was a PhD student from Iran who showed how markers could be used to construct genomic relationships. And he thought this would be a sensible way of using SNP data when it came along. And then about 2001 is what most people consider the landmark paper about how to use genomic information, is where they described the breeding value as the sum of a whole lot of marker effects, which is a very old definition of a breeding value that we all learned from Falconer as students, but they suggested we could fit what we might call marker effects models. So instead of fitting a vector of breeding values, they fit a vector of the SNP effects and sum them up to get the breeding value. And they invented three methods, Bayes A, Bayes B, and what's sometimes called random regression BLUP. But to me, one of the really big things that they did is that they, for the first time, introduced a new way of solving the kinds of equations we were dealing with compared to the iterative adjustment we'd used in the past. And it's a method that's known as MCMC. It stands for Markov Chain Monte Carlo. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a moment. But it's a method that's been around for a little while. And in one particular version of it, something called Gibbs sampling, is very, very widely used now. But that didn't exist at the time that the four land-grant universities were developing systems for routine evaluation. And then a number of people, and Ismo Stradon from Finland and myself, showed that in fact the breeding value model and the marker effects model gave you the same EPDs, so you could use whichever one made the most sense to you. And then one of the other big developments in the last 10 years was Illumina SNP chips coming along, and GeneSeq doing routine genotyping with economies of scale. That was a major development. So when you put all these things together, you say, how do I react to this new technology? Well, you could just shut your eyes and say, we'll just keep doing what we're doing before. Or you could say, hey, I see some new opportunities here. Or you could say, these new opportunities have some really big challenges. But not everybody thought that way, and different people see opportunities in different areas. And that's really good, because that's how you get innovation. So one of the groups that saw a reaction here, saw a new opportunity, was the University of Georgia. And Ignacy and some of his colleagues, Andres Legara and various PhD students and postdocs and friends he had, they said they had already developed a lot of software that based on relationships. They said, we should see if we can use the genomic information to give relationships. Then we can leverage existing software, and they have done that, and they've had a lot of development-based experience in dairy, cattle, pigs and chickens in particular, using that kind of approach for very, very large data sets. And one of the ideas that they came up with was driver four, and this is the variance covariance between all the animals in the pedigree. And that's what we used to describe based on that A matrix, which was based on pedigree. And they said instead, the animals that are genotyped, you should describe their relationship based on the sharing of markers, and that you would modify the relationships of other animals in the pedigree based on what you find out about relationships between genotyped animals. And that particular matrix, when they first came up with the idea, they had to do some hard work to invert it, but then it was recognized that in fact this particular matrix had a very simple inverse. It was just based on A inverse with a minor modification for the genotyped animals. And so that was a huge breakthrough. And basically what that allowed them to do was use this matrix H inverse, we used to use A inverse, and they have developed a bunch of software to do that. So this is what the equations look like. You just put H inverse here, we used to have A inverse, and since H inverse is A inverse plus something else, all you really need to do to take account of it is deal with this little something else, and that is a dense matrix. So that has yet to be routinely implemented in large national evaluations of beef cattle, but Daniela is going to tell you tomorrow, wherever she is in the audience here, about how she has been doing prototypes fitting that particular model to the American Angus Association. So the other group that reacted in a different way to these opportunities were my colleagues Rohan Fernando and Jack Deckers and the various students and postdocs at Iowa State, and we were intrigued about these marker effects models. So we decided that we would focus on understanding those. Now, around the world there were other groups that looked at other things like machine learning, but these are the only two I'm going to talk about because they are more relevant to what is happening here in US beef cattle. So we developed some more methods over and above the ones that were in the original 2001 paper. We developed some new software. We learnt a lot about these MCMC methods, so we used those more or less entirely for fitting these models. We extended it to categorical data, dominance effects, haplotypes. We set up a web system and we had more than 600 people around the world using it, and that represented a huge range of different species, just a few of which I have named there. So just to tell you a little bit about the marker models, if we come back to the original equation, we have the environmental effects and the genetic effects. So we write the genetic effects here as the sum particular. So we can write the equation in this way, but we've also put a little value here I've called delta. And delta has either a 0 or a 1. If it's 0, it says we don't fit that particular genotype in the model. If it's 1, it says we do fit. And that's called a variable selection model. So that says although we might have 50,000 or a million or 10 million loci we want to use in our prediction, we don't have to use them all. We can say we think some of them are zero, but we're not sure which ones. And we can let the data analysis tell us which ones we should be including and which one we not by sampling this as a value of 0 and 1. Using various Monte Carlo processes. So it comes back to that MCMC method. So this is what the marker effects models look like. They come very, very similarly from the original Henderson mixed model equations, but here we have a matrix product of the marker information, and we don't have A inverse, we have some other matrix that tells us something about SNPs, and depending on how we define that, we end up with one of a number of different ranges of models like the ones that I've described there. And we have implemented a bunch of those, and we were able to do that because we got USDA funding for it. So that software was used to develop prediction equations to predict all the MBV that had been used in beef cattle in this country. And one of the groups that got us to run this model was iGenity. They originally got us to find the best markers on each chromosome from the 50K chip, and eventually that led to their iGenity profile, and that was bought by GeneSeq. Pfizer got us to do some of this, and then Pfizer moved a copy of the software in-house, and so they have continued to do a lot of analysis with that software to develop predictions. And then Marty Saatchi, who was a postdoc with me at Iowa State and is now with Genus and PIC, he ran that software on breed association data from a range of different breeds to come up with prediction equations. And the data we use in that model are deregressed EPDs. So we didn't use all the raw phenotypes, we used the EPDs to come up with the predictions. So if we look at where we are today, the American Angus Association only uses MBVs produced by Zoetis. So it doesn't matter whether the genotypes are done at Zoetis or at GeneSeq. Either way, Zoetis generates the prediction equation which goes into the American Angus analyses. Red Angus, there is a Zoetis equation and there is a GeneSeq equation, so they have kind of, and all the other breeds, they get their molecular predictions out of GeneSeq. So just to explain how this works, we have originally with consortium funds until they ran out, we developed the prediction equation. We install that on a virtual machine at GeneSeq. If you genotype with a GGP, LD, HD or whatever, we impute them to 50K on GeneSeq computers. They then apply the prediction equation and provide the molecular breeding values and genotypes directly to the breed association, who blends them and gives them back to breeders and reports. So I just mentioned IGS and Simmental, so I'll just tell you a little bit about their status, because they are a crossbred analysis. So this is the pedigree counts by birth year in the most recent data set we have from IGS. So here are the number that are recognised as being Simmental, so it's sitting at about 120,000. They have a lot of Black Angus and Red Angus data that's included in their evaluation, because a lot of these bulls get used across Simmental animals. And then Gelt V, Limousin, Shorthorn and RDP is main on due. They get run in the evaluation as well. And if you sum up all of those numbers there, it's about 15 million and about 340,000 new ones per year. And you'll see there's a big peak here back in 1961, and that's just the birth date that every animal that didn't have a known birth weight gets put in that. Right. Okay, so it just reminds me to tell you that one of the big complexities that they have that some of the others don't have is that we have to deal with identifying animals that come from a range of different breeds. So one of the things we adopted early on was to change all of our IDs of animals to the interbull ID system, the 19-digit interbull ID system. So this is what I use on all of my genotypes, this is what we require in all the pedigrees and performance data that comes to us. If it doesn't come to us like this, we ask the breed association to make it like this before they give it to us. And that makes their life a whole lot better for all of us. Okay, so we said there was a lot of animals that were Simmental, but because Simmental were admixed breeds, many of them were graded up, and many people found that when they were too high of Simmental percent, they didn't like them as much as when they were lower. If you actually look at the data, this is what we find happen. A lot of animals are roughly 90% Simmental. And this is a graph here. This tells you the ratio of crossbred Simmental to purebred Simmental. And the blue line here represents 1. So the 90% there are sitting between 3 and 4. So for every 1 registration that appears to be 100% Simmental, 90% Simmental. And then there's about 40% of, there's a bunch of animals, about 3 times as many as there are 100%, that their pedigree shows them to be around 40%. And then there's about 2.5 to 3 times as many as there are purebred that are recognized as being about 80%. And you see all these numbers have been coming up since 2000. So when we talk about Simmental, the rest of the world wouldn't really think of them as being Simmental. Only a small fraction of the Simmental data is what everyone else would think is Simmental. Most of them are admixed to varying fractions. So any of the analyses, any of the genomic analyses we use, have to take account of these kinds of things. And that creates a whole lot of challenges when it comes to creating things like genomic relationship matrices, because the frequency of these loci are very different from one breed to another. So the most recent evaluation, when we marry up the genotypes that we get with the IDs and the pedigree. Not all of them agree because of problems we're still having getting IDs sorted out. But this is showing you the number genotyped by birth year. In 2014, a lot of animals have been genotyped that we haven't yet gotten the evaluation yet. So the dip doesn't really mean anything. It's just because that year's data entry is not complete. So if you look back at 2013, we were getting between 2,500 to 3,000 Simmental males being genotyped going into the database. And here is the female number. There's a little bit of a blip back here, and a lot of these animals came from Canada who got some subsidized funding to add genotyped animals. But to start with, all of the animals that came in were genotyped, were just the animals that people really liked. They were the best ones out of contemporary groups. And if you imagine a contemporary group of, say, 10 bulls that were born on a particular herd, if one of them had been genotyped, then the proportion of the contemporary group that was genotyped would have been 0.1. And that's what this number here is, 0.1. So this is about 0.1 to 0.2, so about 10 to 20% of the contemporary groups that had an animal genotyped were genotyped. So they were just doing particular individuals. But what you'll see here is it's jumped up. So in the 2013 data, it got to the point that if we take every genotyped animal and look at the contemporary group it was born in, on average 50% of them have been genotyped. So that's a big improvement on what we had in the past. And I expect this to go up even more as we go to some of these cheaper products. Okay, so incorporating the MBVs in evaluation. So American Angus was the first to introduce genomic predictions. They used MBVs from the traits in each of their multiple trait analyses. They've had tremendous update, and they now have 130,000 animals with 50K genotypes going into their evaluation. The American Hereford Association and the Genetic Solutions and their partners, they use a selection index blending to pull information from the pedigree and the MBV, so they don't put the MBVs directly in the national evaluation. And as we sit here right at the moment, there's about 15,000 genotyped animals in the Hereford data set. There's about 35,000 that have a Simmental ID, and if you include the other IGS partners, they're up to about 55,000. So collectively, IGS data set, which I said is bigger than Angus, is still way less than half of what Angus has in terms of numbers of genotype animals. And just not to forget the other ones, Santa Gertrudis, small national evaluation, but they do use single-step HBLUP. So I think John Genot was the first to use it routinely, but a much, much smaller data set than we're talking about in the Hereford, Angus, and IGS evaluations. So when it comes to doing the blending, we just use old 1940 selection index technologies, which require us to define a phenotypic variance covariance matrix and a genetic covariance matrix. We solve these equations to get the selection index weights, this little vector B, and that tells us how much emphasis to put on the national EPD and how much emphasis to put on the genomic prediction. And that ratio could be different for every animal, according to the solution of these equations, and R squared P is the reliability of the pedigree prediction, and R squared M is the reliability of the molecular prediction. And generally, one number has been used for this for all animals. Okay, so one of the things we know about evaluations is they should behave in certain ways, and there are two diagnostics we have of good behavior. One is that if we regress the more recent evaluation on the older one, the answer should be 1. And the second is that if we correlate a historical evaluation with the change that has taken place since then, that correlation should be 0. And it's very important in these genomic analyses we do that sort of thing. And this is what it looks like. On the top, these are the correlations between the change and the national evaluation, or the change and the molecular prediction. So they should both be 0, but this one's not. It's a bit higher than 0. And this is the regression of the blended one on the national, or the blended one on the molecular prediction, and they should one's not. We're getting some bias in the genomic prediction. And that's a real concern, because it means if you didn't do anything about this, you might actually find an animal that has a molecular prediction that's more extreme than any animal you've really seen in real life. Okay? And that's just because you haven't checked. So you have to check these things. And if you check them, then you can make some modifications. You can change the amount of emphasis you put on the genomic prediction plus compared to the national evaluation. And then you can get these correlations closer to zero and these slopes closer to one. So very important that we check those kind of diagnoses. But for a variety of reasons, no one likes doing all of this stuff. It's a real pain. It would be a whole lot better if we had a single step approach and we could combine pedigree, performance and genomics all in one big analysis. So while all this has been going on since the 50K came along, there have been some more new technologies. There's been multi-core computer processors. They've been increasingly adopted over the last 10 years. All the PCs you buy now have got more than one core in them. It reduces the power and stops them from getting really hot like they used to when you had them on your lap. There's also been graphics cards coming along. And just in the last few years, they've been able to make those graphics cards do arithmetic calculations. So these kids, some of them not so young, who sit at home playing on computers and have these animated, amazing 3D looking pictures, all of that comes out from a graphics card. And the graphics card gaming industry is worth, this year, it was over $100 billion industry. And we could also do arithmetic with it, but we're just a fraction of the $100 billion use of this particular industry. But a bunch of people recognized this, and one of them was the Oak Ridge National Laboratory and Cray Supercomputers. And so back a couple of years ago, they decided to make the most powerful computer in the world. They called it Titan after the name of one of the Titan graphics cards. It has basically 19,000 computers in it, each that have 16 cores. So there's 300,000 cores in this thing, and there's 19,000 of those graphics cards in it. And when I checked this morning, this is the fastest computer reported in the US, and the second fastest in the world still a couple of years later. And it's 10% more powerful than the one it replaced, but it takes up the same room, same space, and it uses the same power. And that's a really big deal with modern computing. This is my Titan. This is just a little wee desktop, but it's got a Perspect cover, and I can fold it back, and here you can see just two of those graphics cards. So this computer is less than two graphics cards, but nowadays there are ones available just recently where you can put four of these cards in. And these cards here are a little bit under $1,000 each, so for a few thousand dollars, you can have your own very powerful little supercomputer to do evaluations, taking advantage of these graphics cards. And the other thing you'll notice here are these radiator hoses, and that's from a water cooling system that comes off the CPU. So this is new technology, and it allows us to do things a whole lot faster. So the other thing that came along is that Rohan Fernando was playing around with the model, the same model that Ignacio and Andres Legarra were working on. And he said, well, actually, there's another way, another computing strategy to fit that same model, where we fit the fixed effects, but instead of fitting the breeding values of the animals, we fit the effects of the markers, just like we've been doing in Bayes A and B and C, for corresponding to genotyped animals, and we also fit the leftover piece corresponding to animals that are not genotyped. And we refer to this as the hybrid equations. And if I was to delete the second row and column, the equations would be exactly the same as the ones everyone uses now for national evaluation. If I was to delete the third row and column, it would be exactly the same equations we've been using to make all the genomic predictions that everybody is using at the moment. So we are very familiar with using these kind of equations. And we were pretty excited about the opportunity of this, and we implemented it in a GenCell prototype, and we tested its practicality on 250,000 animals or so, and we could show that it gave the same answers as Ignacio's method, which involved different kind of computing exercises. So our first attempt at implementer was to approach some of my colleagues in New Zealand who run large-scale dairy evaluations. And one of them, Dave Johnson, was a co-inventor on the Aguilar algorithm. And we said, we'd really like you to try this on your data. And they had a look at it, and they said, this matrix here, this is the imputed genotypes on the non-genotyped animals. They said, this has got 10 million animals in it, 50K. We don't think we can even store that. So they said they didn't think it was computationally feasible. So then we went and applied for USDA funds to do this. And the report we got from the USDA were two things. They said, if we could already do it, if we could prove that we could actually do it with big data, they would fund us. But what we were asking for was funding to prove we could do it with real data. And then the second thing they told us is, well, this is actually getting a bit close to industry. This is not research, this is application that we really don't want. Out of other options, we ended up in the end deciding that we needed to privately develop the software and try and get it funded through license fees. So Bruce and I created Theta Solutions, and for the last 18 months or so, Bruce has been trying to implement these sorts of equations and the old sorts of equations we used to have very efficiently using those Titan graphics cards, and he has had some fantastic performance improvements by doing that. And the other thing that we have been doing in this is we've been using the MCMC kind of approach. So I told you before that the old iterative approach was to take a guess about the solutions and then each guess would get better. What happens in MCMC is we don't take guesses. What we take is plausible values for all of those. So we say, based on the phenotype of a bull and his parents and of all his offspring, what is a plausible value for his EPD? And each time we do an iteration, we get a new plausible value of his EPD. And we repeat this maybe 20,000 times, maybe 50,000 times. So for any bull, we don't get one EPD. We get, say, 50,000 EPDs for the bull. And if all 50,000 of those plausible values are almost exactly the same, then we see he is a really reliable bull. So he has a high accuracy EPD. But if he has sometimes very low ones, sometimes very high ones, then we'd say he has a large prediction error variance and he has a lower reliability EPD. Okay. So our funding model is to have annually licensed software. The licensees will get updates. We call the software Bolt, these biometry open language tools. We'll produce efficient implementations for new methods and algorithms. So we've developed very efficient software to do all of the non-genomic analyses first. And if we take the simmental growth analysis, which with 15 million animals took more than a day to do, it's well under 30 minutes now to do that whole evaluation on one of these computers that's only a few thousand dollars worth. If we take the Pan American cattle evaluation run at Breedplan Australia, which they say takes something like 2.5 days, we've got that running in something like under an hour at the moment. And we'll probably get even faster as we improve it further. And since then, we have been implementing all of these other genomic methods, including Ignacy's version of the single step and our version of the hybrid single step model, and have them working quickly as well. One of the things we're not going to do is we're not going to provide servicing. We don't want to be an entity that runs these evaluations. So we license the software to somebody else, like IGS, to run it. But we provide help in return for that. But they are the ones that put their data through it on a day-to-day basis. We've extended that single trait hybrid model that I showed you from the Fernando paper. We've extended it to multiple trait models. We've extended it to multiple random factors per trait, so we can have maternal and permanent effects. And we've extended it to allow different marker effects models for different traits. So we can have a completely different marker effects models for direct effects and for maternal effects. And I told you before about variable selection, where we assume some of them are zero. We can have different kind of models for that, for the direct effect and the maternal effect. So that is another class of models beyond the ones that are normally fitted in the kind of single step that Ignacy has been doing, where each of them are weighted the same way. We've got a portfolio of command line tools, so somebody using this is not just one big program. They use a lot of little command line tools that do little pieces that set up the equations, and many of those are done in parallel using multiple CPUs, and many of them use the graphics cards. And just to give you an idea about the Gibbs sampler, so this is what the code, we've worked very hard to try and make our code as efficient and as ability to be error-free as possible. So this is the code that does the Gibbs sampler, what we call the single-site Gibbs sampler. So here we sample for as many plausible values as we like, so this might be 50,000 of them. And then here we sample, then we loop through as many elements, unknowns there are. So that's all the herd year effects, all the SNP effects, all the leftover polygenic effects. And that's all that the code looks like. So this was our first version, and we get this to run very efficiently on a graphics card. Graphics cards had lots of cores on it, and since then we've been able to parallelize this and get different computer cores to do different parts of the equations at the same time. But this last line here is the plausible solution part. So it takes what would normally be the solution, and this is the Monte Carlo bit. It adds a random number times something about the diagonal elements of those mixed model equations. So this tells you about how much the plausible value could vary from the actual solution. So this is the key part, that one line there, that gives us, each time you iterate, a new plausible value for a particular animal. So one particular example showing how Bruce applied it to some earth weight data. And here he sorted the genotyped animals to high accuracy on the left, low accuracy on the right. This is the prediction error variance. So this is a measure of how different they were. They were almost always the same. We've got very, very low prediction error variance. So this is high accuracy bulls. And at the other end here, we've got low accuracy animals. So these are probably animals that don't even have their own birth weight. And then the next animals here, he's separated them in deciles, so in equal 10% groups. So these are probably the ones that have their own birth weight. And then as we get more accurate, they've got maybe offspring or other sources of information that lift their accuracy. So the green line there represents a line through the average of these prediction error variance for the 10 groups based on relationships or old-fashioned pedigree. The next line here represents what we get when we fit the single step or HBLUP kind of version, where we weight each of the SNPs equally and we use all 50,000 of them. And the improvement in accuracy represents that decrease there in prediction error variance. So you can see all but the most accurate, we get a lift in their accuracy by adding in the genomic information. But the lift in accuracy is greatest for the least accurate animals, and it's virtually nothing for the really accurate animals. But then the blue line at the bottom here represents what happens when we fit our version of the hybrid model, where we have variable selection, where we say some of the SNPs have zero effect. And there, what's happening is we're able to get rid of some of the loci that are actually junk, really, for that particular trait, and we get a really, really big improvement. So the prediction error variance, even of our worst animals from that model, is equivalent to much more accurate animals, animals with much higher accuracy on the other one. So what we're doing is buying a lot more accuracy by being able to fit this variable selection model, and we can do that same thing in a multiple trait setting. So just to show you how it works, these represent different breed associations, like say the IGS partners. We imagine some sort of evaluation database that stores the relevant information. Here is our little gaming computer running our bulk software on it. So people would upload their pedigree to this evaluation software. They'd upload their phenotypes, and it doesn't make sense to dump all of them like they have in the past. They really should only be dumping the new ones or the ones that have had errors corrected in them. We would communicate with GeneSeq about the international IDs for the genotypes. We get the SNP data back onto that database, and then the extract will come straight off there in flat files, run through the Bolt system and go back onto that database. And that could run on a daily basis or every week or every whatever it is they choose to do. And this could run, say, daily or weekly, regardless of what frequency the new data comes along. We pull it off this results file here, and they would have the most recent values that sit on that system. The same kind of thing could happen for Hereford. So we're also working quite a lot on haplotype models. We expect a continuous migration in SNP chips. We think they will gradually start to include causal mutations, especially when the chip that Jerry's designing, which he'll tell you about more, gets used. We also expect an increase in SNP density, so we can take account of those without any problem in the hybrid model. We expect to start fitting haplotypes rather than SNP models. We're doing quite a lot of research at the moment, and one of the former PhD students applied for a postdoctoral fellow from Zoetis, and he was successful in getting that, so he's been applying that to a lot of our data. And so what we're doing there is we're fitting the effect of a particular fragment according to where it came from, sire or dam, rather than fitting the individual SNPs that are in that fragment. And there are actually less fragments than there are SNPs, so it actually means it goes faster, but it also has advantages in accuracy, particularly in distant animals. So future national evaluations, I think they'll run almost continuously. I think there will be constantly improving genomic features as we move from markers to haplotypes to causals, and a lot of that will involve results from many other researchers and projects. I think we'll have evolving models, just like over the last few years. Maybe tomorrow somebody will come up with a new method for combining genomic information, and Bruce and I will be working to incorporate that efficiently. So we'll get new refinements to single-step, multi-breed, and so on. There'll be a lot of inventions throughout the world, and we think strategies based on this Markov chain Monte Carlo will become routine. Although a lot of people around the world think it's far too computer-intensive, but those people are not using these graphics cards. The graphics cards are the game changer for doing this kind of thing. Summary, breed associations will benefit from adopting international IDs, upgrading their IT systems to facilitate automated data extractions. This is not an easy thing to do, but it's a whole lot easier for the American Angus Association to do it from one database in-house than it is for IGS to do it when they've got data coming from a whole lot of different partners, including some on this side of the border and some on the other side of the border, either to the north or the south. Theta Solutions is on track to deliver Bolt for single-step, multiple-trait hybrid models and many other kinds of models by the 1st of January, which is what our agreement was with our first client. IGS and American Hereford are both currently prototyping it. American Angus is testing the university and their hardware so they can run it, and planning to implement single-step in the next 12 months. So I suspect by the next BIF, you're going to hear a lot more talks about new things that are happening with single-step evaluations. So my last slide, although the NBC is no longer formally funded, the consortium of interested research and extension personnel are still working together to develop and implement improved predictions, just like the team of people like Larry Benishek and John Pollock and Bruce Golden, who originally put together the consortium white paper. Thanks very much.